Let's roll. This is Sports Rage. I am Gabriel Berenzi, the pips, the players, the hustlers, the podcasters, the people that bust them, and everybody else in between. Let's do this thing. It's a football Friday, but it's a more than a football Friday. It's a baseball Friday. It's a basketball Friday. It's a soccer Friday. It's soon to be a hockey Friday as well, as the National Hockey League regular season starts on Tuesday. And, of course, we've got CFL football, NCAA football, NCAA hockey. NCAA hockey starts tonight. And they're starting off with a bang, actually. There was a lot of news in the hockey world. Gavin McKenna, who's going to be the future number one pick of the National Hockey League draft. He played in the CHL. He's Canadian. And like most Canadian kids, they play in the Canadian Junior Hockey Leagues. Except Penn State stepped up to the table with a $2 million a year offer. Like, he's making more money than a lot of guys in the NHL are making. Like, the NHL league minimum is like $900,000. So this kid's making $2 million to play 1 year. Like, he's only going to be here 1 year. And he's getting $2 million to play 1 year for Penn State. And I'll tell you what, man, Penn State's really building something. They're putting a lot of money into their sports programs. I guess they figured, listen, we can't win at football, so let's try other sports. But all kidding aside, obviously they're a football school, but their hockey team is good. Like, they won the Big Ten last year. They're like the favorites to win a national championship this year, and they're all in. I mean, how many hockey teams spend $2 million on one player, right? So the NIL wars have come to hockey now, and I don't know how my Michigan Wolverines are going to keep up. It's not fair, like, when teams like Penn State throw all this money around. Oh, wait, that's right. We have money, too. And Michigan have been stealing players and, like, offering everybody a ton of money everywhere. So just for the record tonight, we have NCAA hockey, and it's on national television. The NHL network has picked up Penn State games very, very smartly so. And the game will be on TSN in Canada as well. Wanted to talk myself into Arizona State because Penn State are like a minus 200 favorite, and the game is in Tempe at the Mullet Center there. But Arizona State have lost four of their five top starters. They're kind of shaky defensively. Arizona State have really built a good hockey program in the desert, but they're not on like the level of these Midwest programs yet. Like, it's a nice, they're good. You know what I mean? Like, they're not, like, they're a serious team, you know, like top 20 type of team, but Penn State's like a top five, top two, top three type of team. So let's lay the price with the Penn State Nittany Lions. And just quickly, Penn State women's volleyball will bring Rob Vino and Cam Stewart in. And you'll like this, Rob. I'm such a degenerate. You know, I don't know everything about women's volleyball, but I know that Nebraska are good. So I bet on the Nebraska women's volleyball team. But I don't know if people realize this. Like, women's volleyball, that's the next thing to break loose. Like, Nebraska, like, sell out their football stadium for, like, volleyball, women's volleyball. And shout out to Fox TV for having a weekly game. Like, when they have football, they also have volleyball. So tonight it's Penn State and Nebraska, and you better believe I'm betting it, Rob Vino, along with the Phoenix Mercury and the Las Vegas Aces.
Well, That's out of my league game, I tell you. But I will say this.
Well, I thought you were going to break down the first set over-under. I was going to ask you, over-under, right. 47 and a half. Over-under 47 and a half, first set. Come on.
You shouted out Fox Sports. The Big Ten Network covers a lot of women's volleyball. You can certainly – Nebraska's prominent in most of those highlights. They have a couple of volleyball experts. I just don't pay enough attention to that particular segment to know what I would be talking about, but I could tell you there's no problem in that. I have no problem.
Bet 365, all over it, right? They're very, you know, they're a big volleyball book to begin with, but they've got numbers for this. And I'm seeing right now, I want to see NCAA. Here we go. We got beach volleyball, view volleyball. Here we go. I want to get some NCAA volleyball lines up. We'll get the numbers up here. Hey, listen, anything that's on, you know, you get this stuff on national television, I'm a sucker for it. If it, you know, I always figure it's like there's a line from The Simpsons with Abe Simpson. Homer's remembering his childhood and what a jerk Abe was. And Homer, like, was saying his first words, and Abe tells him, "Shut up. I'm trying to watch the Super Bowl. trying to support it. It's the first one. I've always figured, like, if they could play it and they're going to put it on TV, the least I could do is right. Least I can do is bet on it. I'm looking for the number here. Man, they got like a full slate here at Bet365. They got like, they got everybody. Oregon versus Iowa. Where the hell is, I'm looking for Nebraska here. Nebraska and Penn State. But
I'm with you, Gabe. A lot of single men like women's volleyball. It's, you know, I agree with you. I think it's the next thing. That's like, if it was a stock, that's the stock I'd buy.
Yeah, women's volleyball. Women's sports as a whole is a good investment for companies because they don't spend a lot of money on the rights and they get big time numbers and they don't have to spend a ton of money on the rights. But so yeah, big Friday night tonight. We got a full slate of college football, we got volleyball, we got hockey, we got the WNBA finals. So Rob, as long as we're there, WNBA finals, it's been a long kind of weird winding road for all these teams in the WNBA, and we end up with the Phoenix Mercury and the Las Vegas Aces in the final.
Yeah, we do. And boy, that Aces, by the skin of their teeth, really takes them five games overtime in the fifth game against a depleted Indiana squad that actually played the back end of the fourth quarter and the overtime without Aaliyah Boston, who fouled out, without Kelsey Mitchell, who got hurt, to add to the already lengthy injury list. So and Las Vegas escaped, and it's a new series now. I don't think you can hold that one against them when it comes to betting this one. But I do think Phoenix looks like the better team at this point in time. We talked about them about midseason. They've lost the first game of each series, right? And then come back to win each series that they've been involved in so far this season. So on the road again, the one common denominator to the Phoenix losses, Gabe, Satu Sabally has had bad first games and then bounced back and played terrific the rest of the series through the first two wins for this team. We'll see if she gets there tonight. Las Vegas has won three of the four games played between these two, and the only one that they lost, Asia Wilson didn't play. So they seem to have Phoenix's number at this point in time. I thought the number was a little bit short here in this game, but I respect Phoenix enough to not completely bail on them. Then I took a look at the total, and these totals, you know, Las Vegas has gotten to 80 plus three times in this series this season. Phoenix has gotten to 78 plus three times this season in this series, but none of them have really gone sailing over 60. They've gotten as high as 65. So oddsmaker has it in a good place. I do like Phoenix for the series, though. I think Phoenix should win this series when all said and done, even if they don't win this first game.
And as much as like we bet totals, I'm with you, Rob, and I've been betting the under. Right, we've been bucking our religious, you know, our we're going against the religion, so to speak. But when you, it sounds low at first, you're like, wow, you know, 158 and a half or 160 in these WNBA playoff games as the playoffs have been going on. But then you actually do the math and you realize they need to both kind of get into the 80s, and it's not happening, right, Rob. Like, it's just not happening, right? Like, it's a battle. They play defense. There's a lot of, you know, there's tension. They miss the shots, etc. I see a 161 right now. I think this is sort of a defensive battle feeling out process in game one. I'm not betting the over of this game.
Yeah, and it's a stark contrast, too, Gabe. Throughout the playoffs, Las Vegas is the number one offensive team. Phoenix is the number one defensive team. That combination probably provides you with something, like I say, right in that territory, right in between that like 157, 163 range. And that's where they're asking us to make a decision here tonight. It's had a little bit of push to the over. I did leave out the fact, let me just say real quick, that yes, Phoenix advanced, but Phoenix also advanced with the help of Nafisha Collier being injured and not playing in the third game and a portion of that second game. So a little bit easier road for them against
it's
Minnesota,
very debatable,
who's the number one seed.
Like, if we were in a court of law here, I could counter and say, yeah, you know what? Vegas won, and it took like Wonder Woman like efforts. You know what I mean? Like, Asia Wilson needs to score 34, Jackie Young needs to score 30, and Chelsea Gray needs to score 23, and then they'll win by one or two. Like, let's be real, Rob. Like, as good as they've been, but they just effing find a way. Like, they're killers. And you know, one thing with Vegas, they're really good under pressure. Right? We've seen this. You know, like especially Jackie Young. Like, as good as Asia Wilson is, you'll notice when the game's on the line, they'll go to Jackie Young. She's got ice in her veins, man. Like, she really does. And Chelsea Gray is kind of flies under the radar. But you know what I mean, Rob? Like she scored 38 of their 74 points. Like, it takes their three players to play awesome, and then they're barely winning still. And then you get Phoenix, who are not really, you know, I would say they don't have stars, but Alyssa Thomas, a triple-double machine. Sobley's a, you know, I've been killing their rebounding props with Sobley in the playoffs, but they're more dynamic. They're a deeper team. They pass the ball around, Rob, right? You see them, like, everybody scores on Phoenix. They got multiple people in double digits all the time. It's a very interesting basketball matchup.
Yeah, Kalea Copper at guard, very, very good. You know, the one thing about Las Vegas, Gabe, is that they went out this offseason and got Jewel Lloyd, and Jewel Lloyd's been just, like, absent. It really should be a core four for Las Vegas as far as veteran superstars in the league.
Late in that game, though, she hit a big shot for them but you're right.
It's, you know, Chelsea Gray, to just micromanage what you were just saying, in that overtime, Chelsea Gray's chucking in threes. A couple of them look kind of impossible, but they got it done. That's like I was saying before. You can't hold it against them. It's a new series. I wouldn't hold it against Phoenix. It's a new series. The matchup is the matchup. I just think when all's said and done, to me, Phoenix looks like the more intense, more focused. Las Vegas seems to drift. Maybe it was because they were such a big favorite against Indiana, and maybe they take this a little more serious. The one person who's always serious is Becky Hammon, for sure, on the sidelines. But I do like Phoenix in the series.
Cam, what's your prediction for the WNBA Finals?
I love it, guys. I'm on the Phoenix Mercury as well, Rob. I should have listened to you instead of my dream with Atlanta, which turned into a nightmare in the playoffs. But anyway, I digress. Great point, Gabe. Take a look at this, too, from a points perspective. Thomas, 16.5 is the total. Copper, 16.5. Sabaly, 16.5. You guys talked about balance with the Mercury. That's what it's all about. Gabe, you guys are overs. I play a little bit more unders, but I agree with everything you're saying, too. It's a finals. It's going to be more defense in this game. Give me the dog and give me the under. And I like Phoenix in the series, like Vino.
You know, I'm concerned that, and I like this Phoenix team. I like the makeup. I like the girls on the team. But I think Vegas are going to find a way, guys. And you know what, though? Like, I can like both sides. I like the 3.5. I think, like, literally we see in the WNBA playoffs, we do get one-point games all the time, two-point games, three-point games, etc. So I'm going to take the 3.5. I'm not ready to pull the trigger and say that the Phoenix Mercury are going to win, because as Rob stated, a lot of this stuff is matchups, and they own Phoenix. They beat them 5 of the last 6 times they played. And historically, just going back last year, like 8-2 the last 10, they've got that championship pedigree. Nobody believed in them. I have a hard time getting in front of Vegas, like, even with their flaws, that they just sort of find a way. It is a 7-game series, though. Just quickly, I'll let everybody know. The MVP odds, Asia Wilson, -120. Alyssa Thomas, +155. Sadu Sabli, 11-1. Kalia Copper, 18-1, Jackie Young, 25-1, Chelsea Gray, 65-1, and then et cetera. But those are the prime time players there. All right, Major League Baseball playoffs begin tomorrow, and there's a lot of excitement in a lot of cities. We've got a lot of blue bloods. You know, the networks are happy. The commissioner is happy. He's got New York. He's got L.A. He's got Chicago. We've got a bunch of rivalries. You know, sort of divisional rivalries and regional rivalries going on here. So let's go through the series prices here first, and I'll throw it to you, Rob. The Los Angeles Dodgers and the Philadelphia Phillies. This is one of the most talked about series and anticipated series. No secret. I think a lot of us thought that these two teams were on a collision course. Well, I think a lot of us thought it would probably happen in the championship series, not the divisional series. But we got a 5-game series, Rob, in your backyard. Los Angeles Dodgers sending Shohei Ohtani to the hill in game one against Christian Sanchez.
Yeah, I think if we're talking series first, Gabe, I do like Los Angeles. I just think the depth and the length of that starting staff, which has been tremendous over the course of the last 3 weeks, outweighs what Philadelphia can throw at them. Pitching generally can win games here. However, the caveat to that is the Dodger bullpen has been miserable, Gabe, and I'm waiting to see what Dave Roberts and the LA Dodgers decide on a playoff roster as far as the pitchers are concerned, because they did leave Clayton Kershaw off in the initial series. It's likely he would be back on. They have the ability to go to like 8 starters out of the 11 or 12 that they name here. And I think you would see more of that out of the bullpen, like we saw with Rory Sasaki, Clayton Kershaw, rather than Henriquez and these guys that are blowing games left and right. Blake Treinen seems to be coming around. But in the long run, I think they have too much pitching. The hitting kind of neutralizes each other in this particular series. But the Dodgers just, I was saying to you off air, the loss of Zach Wheeler, to me, it didn't hurt Philadelphia down the stretch. But he's been a guy in the playoffs who has been just an automatic win as their number one when Philly makes the playoffs. And he's not there. Christopher Sanchez, everybody gets moved up a notch. I don't know that Philadelphia has enough pitching to beat LA.
I'm not as concerned about the bullpen issues. Yeah, they didn't look great against the Reds again, but the Dodgers have big-time leads. And I literally do believe, and not nobody ever says this, but I got confidence in Dave Roberts and Friedman and company. We see it. I mean, what a weird story for Sasaki, huh? One of the most sought-after free agents. Kid gets like a ton of money, struggles early, gets hurt, struggles, gets sent to AAA, which nobody ever thought would happen, gets sent to AAA, struggles at AAA. Like he was doing, like, you know, and in the words of Dave Roberts, they asked about him, and they said, quite frankly, we were hoping you would be more dominant at AAA. We don't know if we're going to call him back up. To fast forward to, yeah, he's going to be our closer in the playoffs. Like, and so the kid goes from being the starter, and it sounds like they really like what they saw from him and his poise. They like the fact that basically, I don't think he threw a pitch that was slower than 99 miles an hour, right? So they realize in limited spaces, this kid can really sling it. And then, like you said, Rob, I'm expecting the Dodgers, you know, the Glasnows of the world, and they're going to, you know, move guys around here and there. But love the Dodgers rotation here. The Dodgers are minus 125 favorites. The Phillies are a super lethal, dangerous offensive team. The Phillies are plus 105. Cam, what's your prediction for the Dodgers and the Phillies?
I like the Dodgers, Gabe. The one thing that they have, I just love Yamamoto. I think their stars are going to step up when they need to. Vino talked about it. Wheeler's a big deal, like a monster deal, in fact. And if he was pitching, I'd probably lean to the Philadelphia Phillies. But I think the Dodgers' big bats are going to get to these guys. So, yeah, I think the Dodgers win, Gabe. And I think they can actually win early in this series.
So the Dodgers can basically reset things. It's Ohtani game one, Snell game two, Yamamoto game three. And Glasnow would be available to start as well. But they could also go right back to Ohtani again, right? I mean, especially the day off in between these games is going to help reset things as well. I think the Dodgers win the series in four. New York Yankees are minus 150 favorites over the Toronto Blue Jays. Blue Jays, Cam, really are not getting respect from the betting market, in which the Blue Jays are technically the better team. They have home field advantage. But, and it should be noted, the Blue Jays were 8-5 this year against the New York Yankees. But the Blue Jays have not had any recent postseason success. They have a lot of players that have not had postseason success. They haven't played well over the last couple of weeks coming into the playoffs. And now the Yankees are hot. What's your prediction for the Yankees and the Blue Jays, Cam?
I think this one goes the distance, Gabe. The one thing that the Jays have that some people don't know about, Trey Yosevich, he's this awesome kid that they had, and he got called up, and he's going to be a part of this thing. He's going to be very important. I'm concerned. Schlittler pitched his ass off for the Yankees. That was a brilliant performance, and if this guy's going too, I think the Jays are a deeper team. I think George Springer's going to help these guys out for his days in Houston. He's a winner. It's up to Vladimir Guerrero, Gabe. We talk about this all the time. He's got to really step up in the playoffs. I'm going to take the Jays in five. It's going to be an absolute dogfight, but yeah, a little bit of a homer pick. I'm worried about the Yankees because they're playing great baseball.
Rob, what do you think about the Yankees and the Blue Jays series?
Yeah, it's funny. 2 days ago, you saw nothing but whiny Yankee fans telling you Aaron Boone is the worst manager in the universe.
Oh, they're the worst.
Oh, yeah.
And now they're all celebrating like they had this series in the bag the whole way. Schlittler, absolutely. He came through in a crucial game three situation for New York. They match up so well against one another. You know, you could see explosiveness out of either offense or both. The pitching matchups, there is a lot of experience on the Toronto side, maybe more than the Yankees side. I mean, when you can go all the way to Chris Bassitt as four, you've got people that have, you know, been around and done that. So maybe a slight lean towards Toronto because of home field and a little bit of distrust, guys, in that Yankee bullpen for me. Not that I think the world of Toronto's either, but I think slight edge for me towards the Toronto Blue Jays in that series.
One thing with the Toronto Blue Jays this year, they got a ton of production from no-name players, like the Addison Bargers, the Lucases of the world.
And,
you know, Ernie Clements of the world and stuff. That's fine in the regular season, but are they going to be able to do this in the playoffs? They do have Santander back now. He didn't do anything before he got hurt, but they're paying him a lot of money. So he's sort of a wild card to me. I think the Blue Jays have the advantage pitching, though. They really do. And as you stated, Rob, it sets up well. And as Cam stated, they trust the Yosevich kid. So they're being very, you know, guarded. All these teams are being very guarded about this. We know Gausman is going in game one. From what I understand, they'd rather the kid go at home than on the road. So I think you could see Yosevich and Gausman game one, Yosevich in game two, and then they're able to go with the veterans that they have waiting. You can roll out Chris Bassett, you know, on the road.
Barrios.
And
Scherzer.
Scherzer's untrustable. Right? I mean, Scherzer can't get out of the first inning. He was good until he wasn't. Right? And that's the whole thing. So I don't think you can trust Scherzer personally. They're going to have to and the same thing with Berrios. Berrios is a little bit dicey, but Shane Bieber. They got Shane Bieber slotted for game three, I believe. Like I said, they didn't tell anyone. But I've been following, I follow this stuff really closely, and they did their simulated games all week. And you could sort of tell by who's pitching at the simulated games. And Bassett and Bieber did not pitch like in the last 2 days, which means that they're slated for that Tuesday, Wednesday, or Monday. Was it Tuesday? Whatever the hell is, you know what I mean? They're slated for games three and four, et cetera. So that's the plan. And basically Gausman's a no brainer. He's going first, but the way that the simulated games were going, people think that it's Yosevich game two, Bieber game three, Bassett game four, and then they would go back to Gausman in game five if needed. And then you have Berrios coming out of the bullpen and Scherzer coming out of the bullpen. I'm going to pick the Blue Jays here, guys. Give me the Blue Jays plus 125. I'm with Rob. I really, you know what? I am sorry. I know a lot of Yankee fans are fans of the show, but I find you super annoying. So you guys are always calling the Dodgers West Coast pussies and we're soft and this and that. So it goes both ways, right? So,
we're just the Blue Jays. Cheap, cheap, cheap. Yeah, exactly.
Tigers, Mariners, Rob. Tigers, Mariners. Mariners are minus 170 favorites. Minus 170 favorites in this series against the Detroit Tigers. And Mariners better win because I'm taking it from Tiger fan, actually. I posted during the series earlier in the week that there should be a new rule in baseball that there should never be two teams from the American League Central allowed in the playoffs. I got a bunch of, like, Tiger fans now telling me, I hope the Dodgers lose, screw you, and Blue Jays, too. You know, like,
so, yeah, amazing.
I'm a Michigan guy, too, so I'm not, you know, it is what it is. But Tigers are plus 145. Mariners minus 170. Mariners have it right there for the taking, Rob. They've never made the World Series before. If they can't do it this year, I don't know when. On paper, they have the best chance, in my opinion. Give me the Mariners minus 170 to beat the Tigers.
Yeah, I can't argue that. I would be in the same place. You know, when you get beyond Tarik Skubal, you certainly don't fear anything in the Detroit lineup offensively. We saw that on display against Cleveland. I mean, each team in that three-game series had basically a breakout inning. Where they won by margin, but it's a little deceiving, games two and three, the margins that were won by. And the Mariners certainly have a huge starting pitching edge once you get beyond Skubal, and the Mariners are the better bullpen as well, or at least neutralize the Detroit bullpen, because Vest and a couple of guys out of that Detroit bullpen are pretty good. But the offense is no comparison, Gabe. I mean, if you're in the playoffs and you're looking for games where one big swing can decide a game, the Mariners have options that Detroit just doesn't. And you know, Javi Baez was miserable all season long, comes up with some key hits in the playoff series, but will that extend to this series? I'm not sure. I have to like the Mariners here. As long as they don't fold, you know, defensively or crumble under pressure, it just seems like they're the better team and both ends, pitching and offensively.
Rob's got to leave in a couple of minutes, so we'll give our baseball picks a little bit later on. I want to get some football with Rob before he departs us to go do his wager talk show. Chicago Cubs +100, Milwaukee Brewers -120. Who do you like in that series, Rob?
Kind of the same type analysis here, Gabe. Milwaukee, the better pitching team, certainly, than Chicago. But Chicago does have some offensive threats. But, it always baffles me, Gabe, how Milwaukee wins these games. But Pat Murphy's doing something right there, and they play really good fundamental baseball. So with a home field advantage, I'd be on Milwaukee.
College football. Me and Rob are known for betting overs. I want to talk to you about the Military Academy matchup because we know the history. 47-12, guys. 47-12-1 Military Academy team since 2005. You want to dig deeper. It's always just been an historical under. So we have Air Force at Navy. But these teams, you know, they've been playing to the over, Rob. That's why we got a 50. It's rare you got a 52.5 in a Military Academy matchup. But I can't get in front of this trend of 47-12-1.
So you can't play over is what
I
you're
can't
saying
play over in this game. No, are you playing over?
Yeah. Oh, I have to play over in this game. I think I've probably on this show, 3 weeks straight now though, where, you know, I saw Air Force, maybe the first or second game, the first game was an FCS game, I think. And then the second game, listen, they cannot defend anything at this point in time. And to put a cherry on top of that, they can throw the football this year, Air Force. They don't do it often, but they can complete passes. I think I said this to you last week, Gabe, when I played the Air Force game over again, and it went way over against Hawaii. They put up like 79 points combined. But Navy's going to have their way offensively. And let's not forget that Blake Horvath can complete passes, too, on the Navy side. So I think there's a little more to this than just the stereotypical option versus option. And I get that they both practice against it during the week. But that Air Force defense, honestly, is horrendous. And I think Navy can probably get upwards of 35-plus, and Air Force will trail them, maybe get to 20 here. So to me, you know, they push this total up 49.5 to 52. And I see a lot of 51.5s out there. So if you do like over, please shop it. Find yourself a 51.5. They are available.
Vanderbilt and Alabama should be an interesting game. Last year, they put up 75 points combined. And it's interesting, guys. Last year, Alabama beat Georgia. And then the next week, they played Vanderbilt and lost. So we have history repeating itself here. But I like the over in this football game, Rob. And I assume you would agree that there's going to be points in Alabama and Vanderbilt.
Yeah, I don't see. Like you said, Gabe, 75 points scored last year. The total we're faced with here is 55.5. I don't see 20 points worth of difference between last year and this year. In fact, I'm more convinced this year that Diego Pavia and Vanderbilt's offense can score on just about anybody. Whether or not they can defend Alabama, which seems to be coming into its own, Kalen DeBoer's offense, Ryan Grubb's offense, it seems to be hitting its stride now, so I don't know that Vanderbilt can defend them. For me, it would have to be over 55.5. I think you can get to the 58 mark here.
What do you think about the Friday night slate in college football?
Couple of things that I did play really quick. New Mexico, San Jose State over. Both passing games seem to be, excuse me here, guys, seem to be advantageous here in this spot. It's interesting, Gabe, because they took basically four key numbers away from us here. So I had to tone down my bet as this line went up, but it started 54. Then they took away the 55. They took away the 56, the 57, the 58. And now you have to get to 59. So latecomers get the short end of the stick, but I still think that one gets over. And I also think that South Florida, I played them first half, guys. Team total over 22.5. To me, when you take a look at Charlotte, I think they see a steamroller coming here. USF is at a week off to prepare for this. They play at that rapid pace. Charlotte's without a starting quarterback and running back. Not likely that they'll hold the ball very long. Give South Florida more possessions. I think 23 in the first half for South Florida, real good play as well.
Anything on Saturday as far as the big time games catch your eye, and we'll move on to the NFL and we'll get you out of here.
You know, real quick, guys, I again, it's just a team that I've fallen in love with playing overs with. I played the Kansas State Baylor game over 61.5. K-State, again, top two receivers back for this game. Remember last week it was Dylan Edwards who came back. That line just sat at 49.5 all week long. That game went way over. Dylan Edwards made a difference. Now you get Chase Brown and the two best receivers back for that team. This is a team that just, it's not Bill Snyder's K-State anymore. They can score. As long as Avery Johnson hits the gimmies at quarterback, they can score. They pose a lot of threats. Baylor doesn't play any defense. And boy, Baylor, their passing attack against that Kansas State pass defense is, you know, probably worth 35. So I think that one gets over. Other ones of note, I think that I would probably be interested, guys, in Washington, Maryland over. Big game out of the Big Ten. Washington does have to come cross-country off of the loss to Ohio State, but to me, the step down in defensive class is huge. You just faced Ohio State. Now you get to face Maryland. And I do think that the cross-country trips in these Big Ten ordeals kind of lend themselves to overs because of the fatigue factor. And maybe for Washington, a little bit beat up on defense by the Ohio State offense last week. So I think both sides make it to 55 there.
NFL football, it's not a glamorous card this week from a fan perspective. I was kidding earlier in the week that, like, if you're a sinner and you never go to church because, you know, the football is on, this is the Sunday to do it. Or if you got to, like, rake the leaves in your backyard camp, this is the Sunday to do it.
Yes.
Yeah, like, you know what I mean? Like, I've been putting this off. Yeah, like.
Yeah, yeah, don't worry.
I mean, look at the slate. So, yeah, 6:30 in the morning for me. But Vikings, Browns, Cowboys, Jets. There's a few. Broncos and Eagles, but there's just a lot of sort of, you know, Dolphins, Panthers, Giants, Saints, Titans, Cardinals, Lions, Bengals. There's just a lot of weird games. But to be honest with you, from a betting perspective, I kind of like this card. So, Rob, I know you got, like, you know, we'll get Rob out in like two minutes here. What do you like in the NFL, Rob, that you could share with us? What do you think about the card this week?
Well, I do like Washington, guys, in a late game. I mean, losing the two tackles for the Charger offense is just, to me, I don't know that that's been looked at hard enough. You know, you already lost Rashawn Slater. You lose Joe Alt. I know Jim Harbaugh tries to make, you know, little changes across that offensive
line. Those guys are so good, too, Rob. It's almost like losing four of them. Like, all that good that it's like he's irreplaceable. Like, that's the problem.
Yeah, and it was a big deal when they lost Slater, too, right? So losing both is just really, really tough. I think Washington's defense might be able to get a little pressure on Herbert. And, of course, you have Daniels back in the lineup here. So I do like Washington, a team in need of a victory. I think if I'm looking at overs real quick here, Gabe, I'd probably lean a little bit towards Dallas and the Jets getting over. Again, Dallas's defense, I think it's just kind of an automatic fade for me, the Dallas defense. And the offensive side of their team is just terrific. George Pickens went crazy last week.
I got to ask you that about the total. 36. When's the last time we saw 36 in the NFL? Vikings, Browns, 36 in London.
Brutal. I'm not sure if it gets there.
Well, the problem with the game, Gabe, is that it's two European games in a row for Minnesota. I don't know how they're going to handle that, honestly. Now, the offense is all back intact. But they lost offensive linemen during that game. Again, it's like when they played the Falcons without three offensive linemen. It showed up last week against Pittsburgh as guys dropped during the game. Cleveland's pass rush, I just don't know. 36 is low. I get it. And maybe the defenses can contribute to help it get over. But that's a tough one for me to get to.
And we got Dylan Gabriel making his first start.
Yeah.
Yeah, truth be told, can he really be worse than what Joe Flacco was doing? No. Right, that was some really, really bad quarterback play that they were getting, the Cleveland Browns. Rob Vino, it's always a pleasure, Rob. Thanks for joining us. 30-second CFL on the way out here.
Very quickly, guys, I played two ends of the game tonight. I played the Saskatchewan team total over 29.5. I played the full game over 53.5. I think they scored 57 combined in week one of the season. Ottawa's been really good offensively the last couple of games. I think like 57 first downs and all kinds of yardage. And the Saskatchewan secondary a little bit banged up there. So I played the full game over. I did play the Saskatchewan over. And as far as tomorrow goes, Gabe, I'm just sticking with the game plan here, honestly. And I'm playing the BC Lions team total over the number. They just seem to keep getting there. That offense has been dynamic. Now, last week, I don't think it got there, but 30.5 here against Calgary, a fading team. So those are two that I've played already, tonight's game and the Calgary BC game tomorrow.
I'm going to be at the game, and I'll send you a link, Rob. I'm going to be on the halftime show, the BC Lions.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, BC Lions halftime show. And you know what? It's cool, but the only thing is I was planning on going to the game and getting smashed. Now I can't drink until after halftime.
Hey, guys, you want a party? How about those Lions?
It was sort of a choice. I'm like, like he goes,
you know,
hey, he goes,
are you coming to the game? Why you just go nuts after the interview? You could put down the headphones.
Yeah, they stopped selling drinks after the third quarter. So I got one quarter there, and I got to be like, it's kind of weird.
Better bring a flask.
It's
going to
be one of the weird times that I go to a game and get more drunk after the game. Normally, you get lit up for the game. Like, you know what I mean? Now I'm going to leave after. But, yeah, I'll be on the halftime show. I'll post the link online for the radio station in Vancouver. But, we're looking forward to it. And they talked about it, too. They asked me about spread. I'll give them I'm going to give them, all right, second half, guys. Like, so should be cool. All right, thanks.
You know what's great real quick here, guys, before I check out? You know what's great is the show I'm going to now, the Wager Talk show. I don't know if you know a colleague of mine, Hakeem Prophet, but we share the same birthday, which is Sunday, October the 5th. So you just talk about getting smashed.
Well, happy birthday.
Hey, thanks, guys. His drink of choice whenever I go to Las Vegas is tequila and pineapple. So this will be the first time I'm actually drinking on a show. We're going to have a little birthday celebration on air.
That'll put you in space there, tequila and pineapple.
I've got the glass sitting right next to me here. So I leave you guys. I go to drink and talk WNBA.
Nice.
Great stuff,
Get sauced, Rob. Happy birthday.
Take care, fellas. Thanks
go
for
Dodgers.
Go Dodgers.
Go Dodgers.
Rob Vino with us. So, yeah, a lot of football. I'll give my picks for the Friday night games. But as long as we're on the NFL right now, listen, I love Rob, but I'll respectfully, I don't trust Washington against the Chargers. This is one of these games, kind of a toss-up game to me. But the Washington Commander offense hasn't looked good this year. And it didn't look good with Jaden Daniels, right? Like he didn't play. They got cocky in the preseason. He didn't play. Then they got lit up. They got shut down by the Green Bay Packers. They really didn't do anything against the New York Giants in Week One. What, they won 21-6. Kind of lethargic. They ran the ball a lot, and people said, "Oh, whatever." It was Week One, and then we saw Week Two. The Green Bay Packers completely shut them down. The same Green Bay Packer team that the Cowboys just went up and down the field on. And then he was hurt, so he hasn't played in like 3 weeks. And now he's coming back, and their offense wasn't in sync to begin with. I'm not sure, like, they just flicked the switch. I can't disagree. The Chargers, listen, Slater's one of the, you're talking about Hall of Famers. Like, Slater's going to be a Hall of Famer, and Joe Alt is only a couple of years in, but the guy's one of the best players in the league already. So they literally lost, like, not just two offensive linemen, but two, like, among the best offensive linemen in the league. Big problem for them. I still think they can find a way. So, I don't love that. And there's another game, Cam, that a lot of our guests, and I know you said, oh, yeah, I like the Panthers, too, against the Miami Dolphins. Mm-hmm. That's another one that, like, why? The Panthers, they're another one. The Panthers are playing without, like, four of their five offensive linemen. They have no wide receivers. They're number one, they're a bad team to begin with. And number two, they're depleted with injury. Like Bryce Young, like Ford, listen, the Dolphins are soft, but if they were playing a real team, he'd get like murdered. They really don't have anybody to throw the football to. Like they've got a couple of guys, but they're kind of overwhelmed. They've been out yarded in every game. Like this just isn't going well for Carolina. It's not getting better. It's getting sort of worse again. And this is pretty wild. The Carolina Panthers, they're 0-10 straight up and against the spread, Cam, the last 10 times they've been favored in a football game.
That's a problem.
Now, they're not favored anymore, though. So if you want to hang your hat on that, the Dolphins have now become one-point favorites because of all the injuries to the Panthers.
It's not my favorite game, Gabe, but the one thing I will say is that game, I was really impressed when they beat Atlanta 30-0. I know Atlanta has their problems. I just don't trust Miami going on the road, even after a solid performance. Remember the Jets too, Allen, he fumbled the ball on like the half yard line, kind of changed the game. Fields ran around and did whatever he wanted to do a lot of the times. It's not my favorite, but I am going to take the Panthers +1.5 in this spot. Also, Gabe, I know you like overs. I see lots of points in this Raiders-Colts game. I think the Raiders are going to get theirs. Genty looks really good. And Geno indoors can hopefully be not Geno of last week, who cost the Raiders a game and they absolutely dominated Chicago. But 47.5 seems low to me. I like the Seattle Seahawks to beat up on Tampa. I know Tampa's a popular dog this week. It's -3 now. And I'm with Vino. I like Washington +2.5 and your Buffalo Bills. I think they annihilate the Patriots and win by 17. I'll take Buffalo -8.5 or 8.
Tampa's another team that gets... they're depleted with injuries, but they just sort of find a way all the time anyways. Mm-hmm. It's pretty impressive. But Tampa, their offensive line is really shredded. And now they lose. They did get Tristan Wirfs back, but they've lost, you know, the Gottigy guy or whatever his name was. And there's two of them they lost. Yep. And now they lose Bucky Irving. So that's really bad for them. Like, Bucky Irving is a really, really critical part of that offense. He's been really good. So that's a big loss for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The cool thing about this football game is the Seahawks are wearing their old school uniforms, okay, and the Buccaneers are as well. So it's like it's a throwback uniform. So you're going to get the cool ass Tampa creamsicles against the original cool ass old school blue and silver Seattle Seahawk look. That's what people are really looking forward to in this game. It's going to be one of the best uniform games of the year. Going to be hard to top that. As far as some trends, I always like to look, and some trends mean, some don't, and whatever. So I sort of like to look and go through and what sort of catches my eye. And a couple of things that caught my eye. So as I stated this week, the Panthers have not won or covered as a listed favorite in 4 years. They're 0-10 straight up and against the spread. Now, the problem with this is they're not the favorite anymore. The Dolphins have become a 1-point favorite in the football game due to the injuries that the Panthers have. But let me put it in another context. All right, favored, or this game's basically a pick 'em, right? So, you know, the Panthers are going to win a game like once a month or something like that, but I don't think Miami are as bad as people think they are. McDaniel is terrible in press conferences, and he doesn't look like a football coach and come across like a football coach, but I don't think he's a bad football coach. Like, I don't think, like, I think he's a smart guy. I think he runs like he, you know, I think his play calling is really good. His offenses are good. Like, he knows what he's doing. My only deal with McDaniel is he's not the type of guy that if things are going bad, is going to be able to stop it. Like, he's not the guy to walk in the room and say, all right, guys, we got to, you know, like, he's kind of one of the guys. Like, all right, when the wheels fall off, he falls off with the wheels with the team type of deal. I know they're without Tyreek Hill too, but I just think Carolina are that bad. I like the Miami Dolphins in that game. We should note here, too, this is an interesting one. The Giants and the Saints camp.
Oh.
This is a real train wreck of a game. Spencer Rattler has started 10 games in his young NFL career now, and the kid is 0-10. The Saints have never won a game with Spencer Rattler
starting. Is he due?
And the thing is, he's actually played well in a lot of these games. Like, he deserves better. Like, he played well against the Buffalo Bills last. They hung with the Bills. They were there. Yep. There's been a lot of heartbreaking losses. They got screwed over by a clock last year. Somebody scored and shouldn't have counted, or, you know, whatever. He deserves better. So Spencer Rattler, though, is 0-10 as a starter in the NFL. And then you got Jackson Dart, who won his debut last week. But now Jackson Dart is starting on the road for the first time. In the last 5 years, quarterbacks that are starting on the road for the first time, 13-34 outright. So they win sometimes. J.J. McCarthy started on the road this year and beat the Bears. And Cam Ward started on the road this year at his start, and he lost to the Broncos. So once in a while it'll happen. So Jackson Dart, his first road start. Historically, quarterbacks don't win their first road start, like as a kid quarterback. Spencer Rattler's 0-10. You got a 13-34 trend, Cam, against a 0-10 trend. And yes, I'm going to say this, and I'll live with it. Spencer Rattler and the New Orleans Saints are going to beat the New York Giants on Sunday.
I love it.
Kellen Moore gets his first win in the NFL. And don't forget, too, Jackson Dart does not have Malik Nabers to throw the football to.
Huge point. And another point is, Gabe, the Saints have been playing great.
Last week, too, with Jackson Dart. Yeah, he won the game, and he got credit and stuff like that. After Malik Nabers left the game, like, basically it was Jackson Dart's legs. Like, the passing attack was not there. And it's not just because Malik Nabers isn't there. Like, he's still a young quarterback, like, reading defenses and stuff. So, yeah, he can scramble around a little bit and stuff, but without Malik Nabers on the road, Saints play hard for Kellen Moore. They've been battling. They, you know, they know that Rattler hasn't won yet. They're, you know, they're going to be desperate to get a win on Sunday, Cam, and I think they can get it.
Oh, I'm with you. And the thing is, I switched, like, first originally, Gabe, I'm like Giants, whatever. And I, you, like you, digging deep. And I think that trend's very important. And Jackson Dart with that hype, beating the Chargers on the road. The loss of Nabers is absolutely huge. And take a look at the Saints, what they've done. They were beat, like, they were hanging with the Bills hard in that game. Guys were making plays. They play hard. I'm telling you, at home, this is the spot. I think you're absolutely right. I'll own it too. I the more I look at this game, I'm like, the Saints are popping out to me. I like the Saints as well. We'll go down together or we'll win together. I think they're going to get Rattler's going to get his first win.
Rob said he liked the over in the Colts and the Raiders game. I would agree with that pick. I see a 48 at Bet365 right now. Indoors, yeah, the Raiders won't be able. The Colts offense is pretty good. Daniel Jones is playing well, but it's really led by Jonathan Taylor. They have a really good ground game. So they run the ball. It opens up the play action. The play calling is pretty good. It's very good. Steichen's a good play caller. Like, his offense is his, you know, philosophy. He came from Philadelphia. His philosophy is pretty aggressive. The Colts are better. Listen, I didn't think Colts were going to be good. So I'll admit when I'm wrong. But I've been betting against them a lot and losing. So here I go again. Give me the Raiders +7. I think the Raiders are going to hang in this game. I don't like the Raiders are not a good team to take like last week, and I learned my lesson. But when they got to win the game, or like earlier in the year against the Chargers, when they're getting 3 or something like that, when the game is kind of like a toss up or close, the Raiders will they'll find a way to screw it up, right? But now they're getting 7 points, so I don't need them to win the game. I just need you not to get blown out. The problem with the Raiders is, well, they have a lot of problems to be honest, but they don't have any wide receivers. That's a big problem. And Geno Smith is not very good. Like, it's, I get it. He's a nice guy. It was a nice story and all that. But I told you at the time, Cam, there's a reason why they got rid of him. McDonald knew we can't win with this guy. We're not going to win. Like, he's the prototypical 500 type quarterback, Geno. In between the 20s, he's pretty good, right? Like, you know, he'll make the plays, he makes some throws. And, but you notice when he gets into tight spots in the red zone, it's a disaster. It's either an interception, overthrown, underthrown. He can't throw it in tight spots. And I'm not just going to blame him, because I'm not saying Geno Smith is terrible. But, and also, I don't understand the Raiders' play calling philosophy. Like, the Raiders act like they have Ken Stabler at quarterback. Like, they're like, it's like they think like they're living in the past. They don't have wide receivers to get open down the field. And Geno Smith is not a type of guy to throw bombs. Geno Smith's strength is like the quick hit West Coast offense. Snap the ball, get rid of it really quickly. Don't let him make decisions. Don't ask him to make really difficult throws. The Raiders are doing exactly that, Cam. They got Geno dropping back in a 3-step drop back on like 3rd and 9s, must pass situations, asking him to pass into tight spots. And then sort of getting mad about it after that he couldn't do it. It's like, well, the guy's been in the league for 10 years or whatever. Like, you kind of know who he is now. Play to his strengths. Like, so, like, I'm not ripping him. I just, you know, I watch the Raiders and I'm like, man, you guys, like, your play calling sucks. Like, it really does. Like, it's just so predictable and bad. And Geno misses throws. So, listen, they're not going to win games. But I think they can cover. I think they can cover the 7 points. In that football game. Agreed. The Tampa-Seattle game, interesting game. Even with all of Tampa's injuries, you know, I was going to take Tampa plus the 3.5, but now with Bucky Irving out, I got to, you know, you got to sort of reassess it. Tennessee and Arizona, this is one of those, I don't know, like, why kind of overthink it? The Tennessee Titans are on a 3-18 against the spread run. The last 21 football games that they played, they've covered 3 times. And they're getting worse this year. Like, they're not better. They're getting worse than they were last year. They were better with Will Levis. Like, at least last year, they lost close games. Now they just get, like, effed up every week. So, like, they're just a disaster. The Lions are laying 10.5 on the road. I don't really like that one. I do think the Bills cover, but I don't really love it. It's not like, yeah, it's one of my best bets. So, as it is right now, guys, my best bets this week in the NFL, what catches my eye, Raiders plus 7, Dolphins minus 1 or money line, New Orleans Saints money line because they're 2-point favorites, and that's about it for now.
Yeah,
I like the Raiders Chiefs. Too. I like the Chiefs to beat the Jaguars on Monday.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we disagree on that game, but I think the Raiders can hang with the Colts. I expect lots of points in that game. And, yeah, I'm totally with you on the Saints. I'm just – the more I look at this game, Gabe, the more I love it. I think Rattler's going to play his ass off, and they're gonna win. They're going to beat the G-men.
And here's a trend for Monday night, although we'll be back before then. But just looking ahead right now, the Jaguars don't play on Monday Night Football all the time, so it's a little bit – you know, you can take it with a grain of salt, but – the Jaguars have not won a Monday Night Football game in 14 years. That's hard to believe. The last time the Jags won a Monday Night Football game was 2011. Patrick Mahomes is 5-0 against the Jaguars and Trevor Lawrence. He's 4-1 against the spread. And the five wins, the Chiefs have beaten the Jaguars by 16, 14, 10, 8, and 7. So I guess you could argue you're getting closer, Cam. It started at 16. Now it's at 7.
Yeah.
Can you cut that to 3 now?
Hey, man, I just think that's a spot play for the Jaguars. I think they're going to play their asses off on Monday night on national TV against Kansas City. People remember NFL is a week-to-week league, and yeah, sure, they got guys back and they beat Baltimore. But as you said, Morency, we look at Baltimore and they've been shredded by everybody. So I just think you get the 3.5 with the Jaguars. I think the hook's important. Depending on where you place your bets, wherever your book is, I'm taking the Jaguars and what I think is going to be a very close game.
If you're in a situational spots, though, it's a bad spot for the Jaguars. Teams that come off of big upset victories on the road and go back home after, they never do well, right? Like, it would be super – look, if the Jaguars win this game, then you got to say, all right, this team's for real, right? You know what I mean? And they're winning football games. But it's a tough spot coming off the road win last week against San Francisco. And I want to get the QBR rating up here. The thing with the Jags, like – it's kind of weird. Like, they're not really playing great, but they're winning games. You kind of see this with teams this year. Their defense is playing well, but Trevor Lawrence is not. All right, so here is Trevor Lawrence has the he's the 20th ranked quarterback, Cam, in the NFL.
Yep.
He's got a quarterback rating of 49.2. Like, that's bad.
That is bad.
Yeah, their offense is bad. Like, they have Brian Thomas Jr., they drafted Travis Hunter, and Lawrence can't get on the ball. And they run the ball all the time. Like, that's the whole thing. Like, they said, their offense is, like, really challenged. And you got KC, whose defense is awesome, that stops everybody. So, yeah, Trevor Lawrence, QBR 49.2. To put in context, like, people around him, although these QBR ratings, like, are kind of deceptive. Right. They're not, it's not a full portrayal of players, but like the number one QBR rating in the NFL right now is Daniel Jones, 79.1. Josh Allen is second, 77.5. Patrick Mahomes, 75.2. Dak Prescott, 74.3. Lamar Jackson, 72. Jared Goff, 70. So you get the gist of it here, Cam. Elite quarterbacks are in the 70s.
Yep.
And then you got Trevor Lawrence, like, at 49. It's a big drop off.
It is. I'm still betting the Jaguars in this game. I think Lawrence is a diminishing skill set too. I'd be very concerned about the future if you're Jacksonville. When you watch him play, I thought a point that you made was an astute one. He doesn't seem to run for those first downs and take the licks that he should. And honestly, maybe he's playing with injuries. Like, he's been hurt a lot. Is it still something lingering from all the past injuries? Maybe. I just think the Jaguars in this spot are going to show up against the Chiefs, and I think they can win this game. So I'll take the dog.
Another thing is, too, these QBR ratings. There's different ones of them, too. Mm-hmm. Like, you've got the QBR ones, and you got the other QBR one, et cetera. Like, there's different ratings. You know, Matt Stafford, 107. Dak Prescott, 95. Daniel Jones, 101. Justin Herbert, 92. So what's Lawrence on this one? I'm just curious. So he's got a 75 on this one. So, yeah, same territory. Joe Flacco, CJ Strouds of the world. But, you know, the problem is Trevor Lawrence isn't old. So that's the problem. It's like, yeah, he's making like $50 million a year, and he's in his athletic prime, and he's putting up sort of like Aaron Rodgers type of numbers. It's a little bit alarming. And I've also gone through a bunch of coaches with Lawrence. Like, you know, he got the free pass, and rightfully so. Urban Meyer was an idiot. So I was like, all right, well, listen, his rookie year was Urban Meyer. He was in tough. Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl. Like, you know what I mean? Doug Peterson was a quarterback, and he really couldn't get it out of Lawrence. Now you got Cohen coming in here, who was great with Baker Mayfield and got that offense going. Still early in the season, though. We'll see if the Jags can get this thing going. But, hey, that division sucks. So they definitely looks like they could win a division anyways. So we'll have all my picks online over the weekend, as always. A lot of stuff going on this weekend in a fight game as well. You got the big bare knuckle card in Newark, New Jersey. I do think that Mike Perry is going to beat Jeremy Stevens. So let's lay the minus 270. It's good parlay material there with Mike Perry, and I'll post my UFC picks as well. Me and Cam will be on Saturday at noon, college football. As far as college football tonight is concerned, give me the New Mexico to beat San Jose State in San Jose State. I think that game probably goes over. It's 58.5. It didn't jump off the screen at me at first, but it probably gets there. But I do like the Lobos. I think the Lobos are going to win the game. They're plus 115 to plus 2.5. I think BYU is going to like really destroy West Virginia tonight, lay the 19-20 there. Similar situation. South Florida, I think, will murder Charlotte tonight. And tomorrow at noon, the games that we'll be on for Air Force Navy, Clemson, North Carolina, Illinois, Purdue, Iowa State, Cincinnati, K-State, Baylor, Kentucky, Georgia, Wisconsin, Michigan. Those are the noon games tomorrow. Any early picks before we wrap it up, Cam?
You like Delaware still? I'm taking Delaware tonight. I'm also going to ride the New Mexico Lobos with you tonight against San Jose State, Gabe.
Yeah, I'll be on the Blue Hens tonight and early morning games tomorrow. I'll be on, I think Michigan are going to roll Wisconsin. I think that Cincinnati, Iowa State is going to be a really fun one. I like the over in that game, 55.5. I lean with the Bearcats too, Cam, but I don't really want, you know, getting in front of Iowa State isn't a very profitable venture.
What about this Virginia-Louisville game? I know the total 60, but these guys, Virginia scores at will, and Louisville could put up a million against that defense. And I know, as you say, you need a clean ride, but these offenses are both, like, they can really put up points.
Yeah, I think there'll be points in that game. I do agree. And I also think that the odds makers know what they're doing here. It's 6.5. It's almost like it was 7 earlier in the week. And Virginia's coming off the big Florida State win. They're trying to get you to bet on Virginia. Like logically, Louisville should not be this big of a favorite. Like, they really are trying to, like, rope-a-dope you in to say, hey, man, didn't Virginia just beat Florida State?
Yep.
So now, and as I stated, teams coming off like the Jaguars. The team's coming off an upset win. Then the next game, there's always that letdown after. It's just hard to match the intensity. I think Louisville will probably roll them. It's 6.5 points. I like this Louisville team this year. But we'll have a bunch of college picks tomorrow. And NCFL picks and everything else in between. We'll be on tonight on the grid. And we'll see you with Cam tomorrow, Saturday at noon Eastern. And, that's right. Give me Penn State tonight, too, to beat Arizona State.
Hockey. What about that total at 6.5? Penn State should score some goals in that game, don't you think?
Yeah, I wouldn't be betting the under. Arizona State weren't great defensively last year. And from what I understand, they lost a couple of defensemen. So, yeah, I wouldn't be in a hurry to be betting the under here. I don't know. Penn State are like a multi-million dollar operation, man. Yeah. Right? So we'll see if they're able to live up to the hype. But you know what's crazy, actually? You know what? It's come down a little bit. It was like minus 200. I thought I saw 160, but it's 180. It was wishful thinking. I was like, 160.
You know what, Gabe, too, for the Penn State, like, this is interesting. With all the things they've done, they are the favorite on FanDuel to win at 6-1, but BU, Boston University's plus 650, Sparty's 8, your Michigan Wolverines plus 950, Maine 12-1. So it's still, despite all the additions they made, they think it's going to be very, very tight, and it usually is in the NCAA.
Yeah, it's pretty wild, too. Western Michigan are the champions.
Yeah, it's crazy. And they're 20 to 1 on.
Like Western Michigan, they're the real deal. They're the champions. There's some really good teams this year. Yeah, like Penn State are no lock. Boston University always choke. It seems like their time has passed. Like those Boston College, Boston University, I've learned my lesson. They never win. Michigan State are good. Michigan State are right. Michigan State and Michigan and Penn. Basically, if you look at it, guys, it's the Big Ten. Penn State are plus 600. Boston University are plus 700. Michigan State are plus 750. And Michigan are 10-1. The Minnesota Golden Gophers are 12-1. Four of the five teams that are favored to win a national championship are all from the Big Ten this year. Then you got Boston College. Then you got Maine. And then you got the Pioneers, Denver, a perennial power. We're at 15-1. So, yeah, hockey's back. Tuesday, NHL is back. NCAA hockey is back tonight. We'll be watching and betting on it all. We'll catch you on the Sports Grid Radio and Television Network. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Subscribe so you get alerted when the show is dropped weekdays daily. Other than that, you're on your own. Later.